Good afternoon. First, I would like to say thank you to David and Eric to organize this session. Just wait until he is closing the door. Especially that they organized it for the as part of the celebration of the International Year of Soil. So he introduced me already, so I don't have to introduce myself. This is the title, and as soon as I gave it to David, I regret, because it's just impossible in 15 minutes to cover from the Gujarat to Numerica. So when you look at the content of my presentation, I will just show a few steps that I find really revolutionary in observation and classification of soils. And at the end of the second part of the presentation, I will talk more about the numerical approaches in expressing taxonomic relationships, and also about our efforts to go universal in soil classification. So I think all of us agree that the Russian school was perhaps the first really revolutionary group, and the paradigm that soils are different because they are developing a different soil-forming environment regarding factors and processes is still the basic paradigm of soil science. But seldom we mention the other members of the Russian school, like Mendeleev, who was Dokuchaev's boss, and Sibichev and Glinka, who were helping Dokuchaev to spread the idea with new terminology on soil formation, soil differences, and the soil profile approach and the mapping approach. Just talking about soil profiles would take up my presentation, so instead, and the answer is here actually, I would like to suggest you to read Alfred Hartoming's paper, which gives a very nice overview on profile depiction from the early years. As a Hungarian, I have to mention that I believe that 1909 was a very important date in soil science, in international soil science. That was the time when we had the first international meeting in agrogeology, and the participants, among which Raman and Glinka and Zsigmond and several other famous people were there, they declared that soil science needs its own common terminology and methodology for observing, investigating, and classifying and mapping soils. In 2009, we had the 100 years of celebration of that meeting, and unfortunately, we got to the same conclusion, that we still need that. During that meeting, we revisited the ideas. Actually, we revisited the places, even the profiles. And I will get back for a moment to that site again. So the next very big step in my view, and I'm sorry that I cannot list everybody, but the very big step then was Hans Jenny, who introduced a more quantitative approach to understand the processes, and also the soil depth functions approach, which is still very valid today. And then the diagnostic approach. I think then that the other very big jump was the diagnostic approach and the creation of soil taxonomy. And as Harry Esfahan declared, that was the time zero of modern soil classification, when Guy Smith in 52 gave his famous presentation, when he said that genesis should not appear in the definition of the taxa. Of course, it stays behind. So the diagnostic approach expressed that instead of the factors and the processes, we should not define the taxa based on that, but on the results, the horizons, the properties, and the materials that we diagnose based on the strict definitions. And then, some of you may not agree with this, being in the US, but I believe that dissolving the hierarchy was a very big step. Many soils carry properties of several soil types. The key takes care of the equal decision, but many other problems will stay unsolved, and important properties may not be acknowledged. So I believe that the introduction of the World Reference Base, which was a result of a big international cooperation, and the introduction of the second-level non-hierarchic way of characterizing soils, so in the introduction of the qualifiers, I believe it was a very big step. So all established properties are acknowledged. Of course, they are not used in oral communication, but having them in the database is very important for some application and also for property soil mapping. So both systems were very important. Both systems were revolutionary, and many national systems should be mentioned, but I don't think we have time for that. But both and most currently applied systems were elaborated before the recent boom of modern observation technologies and data storage and processing. So let's turn to the ongoing revolution, which is applying available new observation and processing technologies on legacy data and new generation data with the tools of pedometrics. So I think the pedometrics is the other next very big jump. And I know that some people in the room may not agree with this, that it was already a foreseen of pedometrics. And this is a quotation for the Guy Smith interviews, that if someone can come up with something, perhaps a computer, someday when we get enough data stored, perhaps we can come up with relations that would suggest something that no one has thought of. So I think in a way it was kind of suggesting what is coming now. Before I continue with that, I just mentioned new generation data, so I just want to say what I mean by new generation data. I mean new generation data derived from legacy databases, from with data transfer functions and other approaches, and also the ones that are collected with new observation technologies. So the human eye now and other senses are supported by sensors, and the conventional methods are supported or even replaced by new tools and measurements. And again, instead of going into the details, I'm just again showing a paper by Hartaming and Minasny, which is very nicely summarizing the new tools. So the human brain is supported by the computers. The tremendous amount of data became available. Relationships became very difficult to establish. So I think pedometrics, again, is the next step. So, and as we may consider Alex as a father of pedometrics, I think he has a seat among the revolutionaries. So, new approaches became available by data evaluation. So what kind of evaluations we can do with these tools? We can evaluate existing systems, the definitions, the criteria, as concepts, consistency, and applicability. With the processing of the data, we can calculate and investigate centroids of those taxa and study the taxonomic relationships of those. And in fact, we are hoping that we can define the existing soil groups of our globe. Taxonomic relationships and distance studies has been in soil science from the very early years, but perhaps the first really soil classification related one was by Minasny and colleagues. And later, my group was introducing it to do correlation between national systems and international systems. And there are many more, but I was just picking up three. Here is a third one with some spatial applications. The Irish group used taxonomic distances for validation of their new digital soil map. So now, a little bit more about the new approaches. I'm talking now kind of on behalf of our Universal Soil Classification Working Group, which is working under IUSS, and the aim is to define the principle and structure of a universal system. Very ambitious. We have an 8 years mandate, and 4 has been already behind us. So the material that we are dealing with are more data. Of course, we are trying to evaluate data, existing data and experiences that we have. Mostly we are working with the subset from the US NCSS NASIS database, and the reason is because that is the most reliable, that is the most available also, and has most of the profiles. There are some other ones which you can see, but I didn't really want to talk too many details about the rest because I will concentrate on the results on those data. But after quality check, altogether the so-called Universal Soil Classification System database at the moment has 62,000 profiles, and if you see, the distribution is not very balanced. So that's a big problem, and when we are looking at the results, we have to consider that we don't have enough data to make final conclusions. We were evaluating, of course, the units from soil taxonomy, since most of the data are classified in soil taxonomy, and we calculated the centroids for all the grade groups. So altogether, we had 280 grade groups that we calculated. Here you can see the classification distribution of the data that we were working with. And the centroids were calculated based on 22 major soil properties, actually the dose that are used generally in soil classification, for 18 depth intervals. And so you can read the 22 parameters. I don't want to read. If you want, I wait for a moment. And here are the 18 depth intervals, more frequent close to the surface and less frequent to greater depths. But what are these centroids good for? So what did we apply them for? First of all, you can evaluate for the depth function analysis or evaluation of the selected properties for each grade group. I will show some examples. We can do some similarity-dissimilarity studies based on distance calculations, and we were using the Mahalanobis distance calculation. And you can also use it to define the existing soil groups with similar properties in space. And here are some examples. Here you can see the centroids of the mollisol order for the organic carbon depth function. And beside the order centroid, you can see some selected grade group centroid. And if you look at the organic carbon depth function, you can see that the examples, most of them fit very well with the order centroid, but the one for the haprandol is very, very different. So if you want to study just grade groups, how they have their depth functions for different properties, these centroids are very good for. Here's another example that is for the depth function for the exchangeable sodium, and you see that from the among the mollisol grade groups, the natropol, of course, has a very different depth function. And then about the distance calculations. So when we do the distance calculations, we define the centroids, and all the grade groups were compared or in terms of similarities and dissimilarities with each other, and also with the centroids of the orders and the higher levels. In this example, you can see the mollisol grade groups, and you can see all the order centroids. What you can see in this table, if you have a low value, that means that the soils are taxonomically very much related. If you have a high value, that means the soils are not very much related. And the values are between 1 to 100. So what you can see here, it is that the haprandol can show us a big distance from the mollisol order, and some other ones are the natric ones, and also some of the very high concentrations with carbonates have a very big distance from their own order centroid and from their other grade group centroids. Another interesting thing is that some of the grade group centroids do not have their closest taxonomic distance to their own order. For example, if you look at the haploxerol, it's much closer to the antisol centroid or to the alphasol centroid. So when you look at these, you can just analyze if the taxonomic relationships are close to your concept, or it is something else what we calculate as a reality based on the data. We can visualize this not only in this shaded matrix, but also around the two first principle coordinates in two dimensions. So in this one, you see that this one in the middle is the mollisol centroid. And you can see that some of the ones which are the so-called moist soils, the most of the aquas, are kind of creating one group, and the others are creating very nice groups. But the ones which have natric sodium saturation, actually, they are very very far taxonomically from the rest of the mollisol group. So the conclusion you can make yourself. The other example, which is a nicer kind of more condensed order, this example is on the ultisols. So you can see that the more green, the lower values of the grade groups are closer to the ultisol order. So it seems that the ultisols are a more condensed group than the mollisols. Okay, now you can visualize also in space when you are plotting all the grade groups around the first three principal coordinates. And in this one, I know it's very hard to see, but I just try to help you to what to look. The vertisols are the gray ones. You see they are creating one very nice condensed group like the ultisol, but these pink ones are the eridisols, which seems to be very scattered and not very close to each other, not making a very good condensed group. If you want to read the details, of course, in these 15 minutes, it's almost impossible. This paper just came out, which is absolutely what I was talking about, testing the pedometric evaluation on the taxonomic units of soil taxonomy. And we believe that it is one step toward the universal soil classification. And actually, yesterday, I just got this slide from Alex. It is a next step. So we have now the soil taxonomy grade group centroids. And the black ones are those. And Alex and his group calculated the centroids of the Australian grade groups. Those are the red ones. And what you have to see in this figure is that in some cases, the black and the red dots are kind of overlapping, which means that those soils are kind of close to each other. But there are some red ones which has no close relationship in any of the U.S. grade groups, which means they are not defined in soil taxonomy. That's a very sad conclusion, that some of the Australian soils just cannot be defined in soil taxonomy. So, but those real close clouds seem to represent real soils that are existing in the space. So our next step should be that we include more data. Actually, I should go to my next step. We should include more profile, a much better geographical and much better number of profiles. We are waiting for our Russian colleagues, the Canadians, actually Canada is twice, sorry, the tropics. And after we have a lot of centroids in the system, we have to reduce the number of grade groups and kind of create the central units of the universal soil classification system. Actually, that's a big job, and it has to have a scientific background, how we are going to define which closely related groups we are considering as one unit of the universal soil classification system. After that, of course, we have to evaluate the new created groups. We have to try how randomly profiles are classified in the system. And I think one of the very big challenges is how we are going to communicate our results to the public and to the users. You have this guy here. This is my co-worker, Vince Lang, so I just wanted to acknowledge him. And I hope that during the next Earth Congress, when our mandate is over, we will be able to report big progress on our work. Thank you very much.
Do we have time for one question?
Yes, I believe so. Do you want me to go into details?
Could it, for example, the way that data were gathered, people walking across the landscape, looking at different soil types, looking at different landforms, like in the Alluvial Valley. Mm-hmm. So the question is, given lots of data,
so each centroid is representing a set of data, and what you are looking for at a certain point, so you want to relate your point to which centroid it is the closest to. So in that way, I think it is, so you look at how taxonomically your specific point with your data set is the closest to the big number of centroids that we will consider the basic units of the universal soil classification system.